I didn't hear anything about shooting twice.
Welcome to the FTN Show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Red Powell.
Hello.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
Gentlemen, welcome to the show, We All About Lost Souls podcast.
We are indeed.
Glad to be here.
How are y'all doing tonight?
Good, it's an exciting night.
It is, we're recording this on Tuesday, so everybody be safe out there. Everybody remember, we're all friends.
Yeah, and no matter what happens, you can come here for your politic-free lollygagging and chicanery.
That's it. Oh, so we have some of the pre-order books in hand, including the Imperial Armor Compendium. And there's some interesting things. You know, Forge World is weird. It's kind of, it's hit or miss is what it seems like a lot of times. And I don't want to say things get shifted around randomly, but I think there's going to be like some crowd favorites that make a resurgence.
Yeah, it seems like every time they redo one of the Forge World indexes, there are a few more things either drop off the wayside or fall off the face of the game entirely, and a few other things are brought up into prominence. So I'm always interested to see what they do. I think I had some naysaying and some doom and gloom at the end of last episode with some concerns, but they can seem to be pretty unfounded, which I'm really happy about.
Well, so yes, you're right to say that some things did, you know, they're just not in here anymore, and some of the options are kind of limited for certain factions, such as like Death Guard and Thousand Sons, for instance. Or they seem like they've had a lot of their options reduced because the way the wording is now for Chaos Space Marines is it's specifically all that stuff for Chaos Space Marines is just for Chaos Space Marines and not for Codex, Death Guard, etc.
Yeah, or Thousand Sons. Yeah, yeah. It's a weird thing there. I'm hoping that's an FAQ away from being fixed up, but it honestly doesn't seem like it is. It's worded out pretty well to say that it's just for Codex Space Marines.
I mean, I'm not going to say that those options will never return for those factions, but it's not an FAQ thing. I mean, this is a deliberate.
Yeah, the word seems to be 100% deliberate.
Yeah, I mean, again, not to say that those choices will not reappear for those factions ever again, but it just seems kind of deliberate here. But what I'm saying about fan favorites, the Hornet was a popular choice, a popular Eldar choice for a while, and now I think it's got some decent points, and people already have them. If you were playing with Hornets before, you had them, and now you may bring them out on the table again, you know, for their Hornet Pulse Laser, 36-inch heavy 2, neg 2, damage 2, strength 7 weapon.
Nothing wrong with that. How many points is that Hornet getting you?
Yeah, that's the question.
I think it's something like 90 points, and that's unless you put some... here, let me just go what it says. So the Hornet base model is 80 points, and then the Hornet Pulse Laser is 5 points. So you take two of those, so for 90 points, you get a Hornet, which is 8 wounds, toughness 6, 3 plus save. You can take Eldar Wargear on it, so you can take the Crystal Targeting Matrix, Spirit Stone, Star Engines, or Vectored Engines. Those, of course, cost extra points. And then it has a Lightning Assault. Each time a ranged attack is made against this unit, subtract 1 from that attack's hit roll.
Yeah, fair.
18-inch movement.
Are they still come in squads?
You can get up to three models.
Was it 1-3 or 1? Yeah, it was 1-3 before. Yeah. So what's that? 270 points. And how many shots would you get from each one?
Four apiece. Four shots.
So 3 together, that's 12 really, really good anti-tank guns.
Anti-intercessor guns. It's anti-sanguinary guard guns. I mean, this is...
Right. And you just described a better Dark Eldar Ravager in like almost all regards.
Spot on. Great comparison. I mean, Ravager's toughness 6, 10 wounds, but a Hornet is what? Toughness 6, is it 9 wounds, 8 wounds?
It's 8 wounds.
Minus 1 to hit.
Minus 1 to hit, but a lot cheaper.
Minus 1 to hit, and then that's not, so, I mean, I, it may be max out. Is it max out at minus 1? Because the Craft World, you could stack that on there, so you maybe...
Well, so if they've got a plus 1, you can use it to stack on the Craft World to make it an additional... It does top off at, you know, you can't go more than minus 1 or plus 1, but you can add those things up so that you can make up for someone if they're trying to get a plus 1 on you.
But Hornets have the perfect kind of amalgamation of weapons to get the absolute most out of things like Expert Crafters. Having high potency, high damage, low quantity quantity of shot weapons makes, like, you'd probably go expert crafters, and then just if someone has a plus one to hit, you'll lighten reactions, the guys.
Yeah, and you can put the other weapon. You don't have to put the Hornet Pulse Laser on there. I think the Hornet Pulse Laser is the superior weapon in this case, but you could put other things on there, like Bright Lances, Eldar Missile Launchers.
Can they take Star Cannons?
They can, for 5 points, yeah.
Ooh, okay, but it's the same amount as the Pulse Laser, and the Pulse Laser just seems more solid. Only one less shot, better strength, consistent damage. Yeah. Interesting. No, I've been a big fan of the Hornets, and I like the model's pretty cool as well.
It's a sweet model. Yeah, I can never keep the that has some back fins that stick off from it. Mine don't have those because they don't stay on it when I'm traveling and moving it.
So I have a couple here that I want to talk about, but the one that just popped into my head, this is one of my most favorite models of anything that Forge has ever done, and I call it the Big Dim Sim. It's the Tyranid Dimecheron. It's on page 219.
I'm going there right now.
Beautiful. Because, yeah, this model, it looks like the Alien Queen out of Aliens 2. It's a phenomenal-looking thing. In I think it was in 6th and 7th edition, there was a little bit of play with it, like on some fringe Tyranid builds could make it work. 8th edition, it was an absolute travesty joke of a thing, because you could see it. It's one of the tallest models that Forge World makes. It's almost as tall as a knight.
Is it the demon-looking one thing or whatever? I mean, I know it's not a demon, but it's pretty vicious-looking.
It looks kind of like a cross between a Bloodthirster and a Keeper of Secrets.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
In Tyranid form, yeah.
Yep. We've talked about that model before. 18 wounds?
Can't be obscured. Yep, keep going.
Leaper Killer. This model has a 5+ invulnerable save. In addition, each time this model makes a normal move, it advances, falls back, or it makes a charge move. Until that move is finished, it can move horizontally and vertically through models and terrain features.
What's his movement characteristic?
12.
Ooh, that is not bad. Tell me it's as good as a Greater Daemon in combat now, and the rubric real quick complete.
So it's 6 attacks. The massive scything sickle talons gives it a D3 damage +3.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, each time an attack is made with this weapon, you can re-roll the hit roll.
Okay, we've got a source. Yeah. I think I can get with that.
Scything tail, each time the bear fights, it makes one additional attack with this weapon, and no more than one attack can be made with this weapon. Mm. So you got that little tail flip. 2 damage next.
Have you guys noticed they're putting those caveats in on those extra weapons? Like, no more than X amount of attacks can be made this weapon? Because before then, if you didn't want to kill something and you had a crappy tail weapon, you'd be like, oh, I use all my attacks on my tail weapon so I don't kill you and we're locked in combat or whatnot, or other little workarounds like that. But yeah, they seem to be closing off a lot more of those. But yeah, he sounds pretty cool. Look, and I'm just happy. I'm just happy when really good models are playable and I'll see him on the table, because there's nothing worse.
2 or 3 other rules.
Lay him on me.
Yeah, Thorax Spine Maw. After this model has made close combat attacks, before it consolidates, select one enemy model within engagement range, excluding aircraft. That model's player rolls 1d6 and adds the model's strength characteristic. If the result is equal to or less than this model's strength characteristic, the model's unit suffers d6 mortal wounds.
So they have to roll over the Dimecheron's strength?
Yep. Is equal or less? Yep.
Yeah. And then it just auto-dies or something?
D6 mortal wounds.
Ooh, I actually like that a lot. That makes it pretty saucy if you're killing strength 4 creatures or characters. What's his? Is he toughness? Is strength 7? Yeah,
strength 7. Yeah,
yeah. Cool, man. Nah, that sounds cool. What's his other one?
You digestion said spine. If an enemy model, if any enemy models are destroyed as a result of this model's thorax spine maw ability, at the end of this turn, this model gains the following ability until the end of the into the battle. Regenerative physiology. Each time this model would lose a wound, on a roll of a d6 and a 5+, that wound is not lost.
So you turn him into a great unclean one. That's pretty sick. So he's got a 5+ invuln. As soon as it kills or eats something with that special rule, it gets a 5+ feel no pain, essentially, on 18 wounds with movement 12 and essentially fly. Cool. Okay. I can jump down on that, because, I mean, you could put Catalyst on it to give it the 5+ feel no pain until it eats something. And then you can chuck Catalyst somewhere else or whatnot. Yeah, I'm down. I think it's cool.
He has 230 points.
Maybe that's okay. we'll see.
For a Tyranid army, I think that actually is okay, because you're taking a bunch of cheap. Sorry, Ray, go ahead.
No. I agree. Like 230 points for. I mean, the greater demons aren't too far. When I greater demon, we're talking Bloodthirster, greater unclean one. I mean, that's that same ballpark. I think there's a place for it. It's just, I think it's really tough right now in the current meta with folks running, with Death Watch incoming, Space Wolves incoming. eradicators all over everywhere. The place. It's just so tough. It's really tough. Unless you have some kind of rule like the bloodthirsters have that limits the amount of wounds it might take, like that. It's really tough.
So, I mean, I can see conceivably that you have enough smaller bugs to run screen where they can't bring all those weapons, the eradicators, to bear on them. And then the Daimakeron moves up and then charges over your screen because it can ignore those models.
Yeah, I think that's a big deal.
Maybe. Look, I'm saying 230 points is, I don't think, is terrible in a Tyranid, in a Tyranid list.
I'm just no expert on Tyranids, so I don't want to go on a limb and say, yep, this is the bee's knees. Get on it.
But, every time we say something about Tyranids, we get informed about how little we know about Tyranids.
I'm surprised we haven't had that about orcs yet, because we've been talking about orcs every week, and everyone's just like, yes, orcs! Do you know why? Because orcs are just good people, all right?
Yep.
Just good people. Orc players, good people. They're just happy to be part of the show.
Yep. Back the Eldari, I used to use a lynx a lot.
Which one's a lynx?
It's got a big old cannon on it.
That's most of them, isn't it?
Yeah. It's basically all cannon. It's a cannon with like some wraith stuff around it.
I can see it. Yeah, it looks like two ships stuck together with a cannon in the middle.
Yes. Yeah. And the cannon on this now is heavy, heavy 6, strength 9, neg 3, AP, damage 3.
Heavy 6, you say?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I think it's probably too many points for what it is.
How many are we talking?
I'll tell you in a second. It is base cost 220 points.
Yeah, because it's competing with Fire Prisms, because it's got a similar profile or similar job. Fire Prisms. Well, I suppose you do have to take multiple Fire Prisms to make them good. So maybe we are talking like comparable points.
It's just a giant model. The model is one of those where, you know, it's just always a target.
Not fair enough.
Maybe that's why. But it is, I mean, technically it's got a lower profile, so I guess it could hide behind some, if you had a big enough building, but I guess I just haven't seen too many tables with wide enough terrain to where it could sit behind it.
Yeah, it's super flat, isn't it? It's like
it's
a
flat,
flounder.
But it's long. It's like
a bottom feeding fish.
It is a lynx. Yeah. It is a spry cat.
It is not. It is a halibut. It is a bottom feeding fish.
Somebody's like talking like they want to get hit by a lynx pulsar.
I'll throw my giant dim sim at it. It'll be fine. good times.
Yeah. That Warp Hunter right in there. Warp Hunter is the one with the decannon on it. Those got some play in the past too. And they come in at 195 points base. But they're more like a Wave Serpent body.
Interesting. I'm a big fan of the Scorpion. That's my favorite Forge World Eldar model, the Scorpion. I think that thing looks amazing.
That's the big one though, right?
It's the huge one. Yeah, that's the big, big boy.
Yeah, I don't have one of those. But it has a twin Scorpion Pulsar, which is heavy 12, strength 12, neg 4 AP.
What's the damage?
D3. I'm sorry, not D3, 3. Damage 3.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. I was about to say, yeah, D3. Oh, that's terrible.
It doesn't matter. No one's taking that big boy.
Someone tried to take it to an event that I ran, and I had to veto it at the time due to public outcry. It was funny.
Well, of the big boys, it's only 500 points.
Fair. Yeah, that's not too bad.
It's not horrible. I mean, but it's still... What's its unit classification? Is it a Lord of War?
Lord of War, yeah.
Yeah, sure that's. I mean, I'd say there's a fair trade there. If you're bringing that thing, it's eating up so much CP just to come in the list.
It's a quarter of your army, and it's going to take 3 CP away. That's a big deal.
And the problem with a lot of Eldar tanks, while they look sweet, they have like this one main cannon and then just some piddly squirt, you know, shuriken catapult or something on it.
They have nothing of the ilk of a Baneblade, do they? Which Baneblade's like, I'm going to kill that thing real dead, and then I'm going to pinch it into these 5 other things. They're all going to take damage. Yeah. Eldar's like, yep, that one thing is double dead, but it didn't need all of it. You overkilled it. You overkilled the absolute crap out of it.
Yeah, so I mean, in a world, you know, with the heavy 6 though, with 3 damage and a healthy AP, you could take a bite out of some squads. I just don't think heavy 6 is enough to kill what you want to kill.
Well, it's not enough to kill an equivalent. Like you think about a shadow sword, yeah? Think about it. They have no shadow sword gun, to my knowledge. And they should. The D-cannon should be the shadow sword gun. Should be pretty much the same profile.
I agree. And the D-cannon is actually, I mean, it's slightly different. Like, that's like the Warp Hunter we were talking about. Like, its damage is heavy 3 D6 damage.
Yep.
I mean, you're not getting a lot of range out of that. But heavy 6 Like you may. I don't even know that you kill a knight with that.
No, you don't. You don't come anywhere near. Because like you got six shots, even if you hit on twos, theoretically you got five hits, winning on threes because you're not strength 16, are you? So theoretically, on the best side, if you've got three wounds, even if it doesn't rotate, it's going to save one of those. You're only going to half kill it or do six damage or whatever.
Yeah.
So like even on the worst of the best of the averages, you're like maybe you half kill it.
Yeah. So I don't see the Lynx making it in. But again, I think Hornets though are primed to make a comeback.
Dude, absolutely. I think they're great. They're really good.
And I always look. I try to look at the Wraith Seer too because I love that model.
Mm.
It's the Psyker Wraith Lord with the D cannon on its shoulder.
Mm.
Yeah.
Red, do you want to talk about some Chaos stuff?
Oh man, one thing I think we can hit before we jump right into the Chaos stuff is the Hellforged and the Forge or the new way that they're going about the relic tax, I guess you might call it. I mean, now it's spread even across Chaos and Space Marines. You know, now it costs a CP to take any of these things that you used to, you know. So Space Marines, if you wanted to bring a Leviathan, you used to have to bring another unit just to bring it. You couldn't bring just the Leviathan by itself. You had to bring another heavy option. That wasn't too bad. Now they've moved it into this realm of you have to pay CP for it. And then they added on for Chaos that you have to pay CP for any Hellforged, which, I mean, again, it kind of balances it out. What's not balanced again is we go back to this. They took out all the Hellbrute words, so none of the Chaos Dreads or anything like that can benefit from Chaos Legion traits right now.
Oh.
Yeah. Oof. However, I'll tell you what, a big one that happened was Blood Slaughterers. I got to make the kick on the corn here because Blood Slaughterers and that transition, I think it's a pretty big deal. There's some other stuff to it, but with the Blood Slaughterers, so they're no longer degrading. They're just straight 9 wounds. Pretty big deal because they're just going to hang in there. The harpoon that you had, you know, there's always this kind of debate. You take the melee weapon, the extra melee weapon, or the harpoon to get the little range. I mean, the harpoon now, it's essentially halves the movement on any target hit until the start of your next shooting phase. And then in addition, it gives you two extra inches to your charge roll.
Add 2 to that charge roll. Yeah.
That's huge.
That's
and
pretty
then
nice.
The fact that he dropped, I think it's 40 points from what he was before. I mean, it's crazy because I sat there and looked at him for a long time, and Defilers really ended up just being more versatile. But the Blood Slaughterer is just, I think that there's some play for it. I
Blood
think Slaughterer really got
a
way for
40 points.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's awesome. Running them, I'd totally give it a consideration here. The next thing, and we just got to see how it goes forward, but the next big one. So, you know, LVO, I ran Dreadclaws, right? I was running Dreadclaws, and you just didn't see Dreadclaws as much, but I mean, they were great because their movement, always moving 15 inches, even degrading, they continue to move 15 inches. Well, now they've added the drop pod assault rule on them, which means that it's coming in. It can come in turn one. From what I saw, the only issue being is that it doesn't have the disembarking verbiage that's also on drop pods. So no longer does it come in and then the unit is regurgitated out. However, you can save it, right? So you can deep strike it and then it can still come in turn one. Now, of course, you know, you're not disembarking in turn one, but there's something to that, I think, that you can still kind of control what's on the field or off of it. Very helpful given that a lot of times, honestly, beforehand running a Dreadclaw, I would just start them on the field and just take my chances pushing them up as fast as I could. Now that they could start, you know, the end of turn one, if I'm going second and these guys come in and they can start 9 inches away. And then as soon as you kill them, all the little things come out. Like, I think I'm okay with that. So those are two really big things. There was some other stuff. I mean, Decimators look like they had some changes that might be worth looking into. But other than that, I mean, I'm pretty on board with this. I'm a fan.
You nice, can man. Put Obliterators in the Dreadclaw as well.
They added that into the... Ooh. Okay, that's... all right, let's do it.
Turn on a Blitz. Nice.
So each Cult of Destruction model takes up 3 wounds. That's Obliterators,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that is. That is, yeah. I can't remember if they were in there before, but that's... I'm not complaining.
I just know that obliterators are typically kind of either, you know, they come down, you know, they dump and then they get destroyed.
Right.
Might be a way to bomb an extra turn or gives you be a little bit more strategic. Yeah,
I'm interested to see if they FAQ the assault rule to add in the disembarking piece to it, because that's kind of like you typically think that goes hand in hand with it. But if it's not, then it's not. You know, so termites, you used to be able to choose when a termite drill came up if you wanted to disembark or leave them inside. And while that's, I mean, that's some nice wish listing. For now, as it is, it can just come out. It just deploys in turn 1 through 3, but you can't disembark the turn it comes in. So
jump back dudes can get in this also. I don't know if that was something they could do before.
Yeah, so it was cool because back, you know, it used to be, I can't remember if it's still, I didn't get to see the transport capacity. What's the total?
It's 10.
Okay, so it wasn't bad because I was running, of course, I was running 8-man berserker squads, and then I would bring a jump pack guy who took up 2 spots, so it worked perfectly.
Yep, you can still do that, or Contemptor Dread, or a Halberd.
Yep, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a nice little new way to use them.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the flip side of it being, and you guys kind of hit it before with the Death Guard not getting the option anymore. I know a lot of people who are running Death Guard with drills, and the fact that they don't get it, that hurts. I know it hurts them.
Yeah, I think that does hurt them quite a bit. I mean, they still got Rhinos and they got a Codex just on the horizon. The one I'm more worried about who's, because Death Guard's in a relatively good place. Even if they weren't getting a Codex, they're in a relatively good place game-wise. Like Psychic Awakening was very good to them. But I can't say the same for T-Sons, and now T-Sons don't get any Forge World help either. So, I'm hoping they get a little bit of a revamp. I'd love to see them get the Necron treatment and just get like 50% more units added to their line, their range.
I mean, they got a lot of they. I don't know if they'll get more a wider range. Yeah. They just have so much unique stuff going for them right now. Anyways, I say so much. I mean, they've got sorcerers, they've got Rubric Marines, they've got Terminators, right?
And Zangors, and that's
Zangors. You know what? They've got a Mutalith, and they've got Magnus. I mean, okay, they. I think Thousand Suns and Necrons might be on a near similar page for how many units they might have.
So the
not anymore.
The greater blight drone is in the Chaos Space Marine section, and that's the only thing in the Death Guard. The Death Guard greater blight drone section.
Yes.
So got him.
The Death Guard, not only did they get their options reduced, their single option is also a choice of Chaos Space Marines.
So everybody I think else as well.
A greater insult than the Thousand Suns.
There's one I want to talk about in Space Marines. I think there's one you want to talk about in Space Marines first, Paul. So maybe we do yours and we'll get to mine.
Well, the Fire Raptor gunship is what I was thinking. This is one that was popular for a little while, then fell back off. And I don't know that it's going to be great now. The Fire Raptor, it's base 340 points. If you go with the quad heavy bolters or the twin las cannons, you're plus 10 points for the las cannons, 30 points for the quad heavy bolters. I think the quad heavy bolters are the way to go.
Yeah, so with the heavy bolter buff. For sure, yeah.
So you're getting heavy 12, so heavy 24, strength 5, negative 1, damage 2.
Seems good. What's the Avenger? What's the Avenger Mega Bolter wherever it is on the front like now?
It is heavy 10, strength 6, neg 2, damage 2. So I think that's the same. Heck, it might even lost a couple shots.
No, I think that is the same. But that's I like that profile at the moment. That is my favorite profile. That's actually kind of my favorite profile in the game. It's kind of the same as the Tau. Heavy burst cannon and the Avenger Gatling on the knights. That strength 2 minus 2 2 damage just seems like the or things like star cannons, things that are over strength 5, so they're good against Termies and Eradicators and Gravis armor. Good rend and multi damage just seems to be my favorite sweet spot at the moment. So I'm a big fan.
Look, 24, you know, strength 5, neg 1 AP, damage 2 shots.
Yep, and that's not counting into dev doctrine and all the other wacky stuff.
Yeah. Do. So and then so you're firing on turn 1 during the Devastator Doctrine, what is it, 34 shots all at damage 2.
Yeah.
They're potentially 3 different targets.
Yep, and there are ways to buff them as well. I mean, I'm not sure if you can use the Ironstone on it. Could you use Pharaoh? I know Pharaoh can't give his plus bliss skill to. Can he give it to vehicles? I don't think he could for some reason.
No, it's just but infantry new, for his stuff now or whatever.
But the new Forge World upgrades for core. Never mind. I'm trying to break the game and I'm failing. It's probably
this is not core. Yeah.
It's probably a good
this game. Is not core.
Thank God. Praise be.
So, I mean, see, we're talking about 370 points, and you're also talking about that's what if that's on the table, it's getting shot. One, because it's a giant model, very impressive looking, and it can put out 34 damage, two shots a turn.
But, you know, surely it gets to shoot once no matter what, yeah? Because in the games where you are afraid of it dying and you're going second, you just leave it off the board. It's a flyer, just comes in for free. And in the other games, in other games, you can just deploy it out of range of whatever's going to be in danger of hurting it, then fly it up to whatever you want to kill. And it's got the right ranges on everything. Everything's like 36-inch range, so it's very good at strafing along your backfield as of an ilk of what Eldar planes used to do, you know, when people do their Crimson Hunters.
Yeah, like, and what Red, what you were talking about is, so in the Space Marine side, it's Martial Legacy. If your army is battle forged and when this unit is included in the detachment, increase that detachment's command cost by 1 CP.
Interesting.
So it costs you a CP to take it.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's going to be worth it. Sometimes it's not going to be. I mean, if you're taking a single detachment, like a battalion, I'm finding playing like a single battalion of Dark Angels, I've got CP to spend to just frivolously throw away. So yeah, it is something you can look into.
You get a CP back. So yeah, you do start one down, but it's not that big of a deal.
You've got 17 to account for. You know, maybe spend 4 or 5 pre-game. That's still another 13 you can account for, 12 you can account for.
I'm just saying, I have a Fire Raptor. I'm going to try it.
I've got a Mastodon, but I'm not going to try it. There's two else in the Space Marines I want to talk about. One's the Whirlwind Scorpius, which I know has been a mainstay for everybody. And the other one's the Derridaeodred. It's not Relic anymore. That's on page 17 if you want to hit that one up, Paul.
I'm at the Whirlwind Scorpius first.
Yep, fair enough. Because yeah, everyone's been super hot, super crazy for the Whirlwind Scorpius. It's been a very strong choice for quite a long time. All of 8th edition. Essentially, after that Forgeware book came out, it was pretty much good from then. It was a little overcosted and has maintained being quite expensive since. But what's it like now?
170 points.
Seems reasonable. Does it still shoot twice at that nice strength 6 minus 2, 2 damage that I'm in love with?
It does. No, it does not. So the Scorpius multi-launcher, 48-inch range, heavy 3d3, strength 6, neg 2 AP, 2 damage. And it can fire things that are not visible.
That's it. No double shooting. It's just got 3d3.
I didn't hear anything about shooting twice.
That's right. That's probably good. I mean, 3d3 shots at that profile that you don't have to see is still amazing. And for 170 points, I still think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, neg two damage, strength 6. Strength 6 is it's a sweet spot. I don't know if you're actually paying for the strength 6. Like, strength 6 you don't have to pay for is the best.
That's true.
But this is, I think you are paying for it a little bit in this. But you can fire out the line of sight, so go for it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what was so crazy. Remember what was so crazy about Eldar in 7th edition? They didn't have to pay for their strength 6.
Yeah.
Like, they just got strength 6 for, you know, the price of building any army. But yeah, like at that profile, that's fine. For 170 points, I think they're still good. 170 points, pretty reasonable for that.
And it's got the Martial Legacy rule. Not everything in this book has the Martial Legacy, but the ones we've talked about so far do.
Wait, so is it 1 CP to include any of these, or is it 1 CP per one of those you put in? Ouch. Per. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's what, again, does that not feel balanced, right?
It does. Well, it means that if you want to take your super sweet, amazing centerpiece Forge World model, you can and you will be able to. But if you want to try and break the game through the medium of Forge World, it's going to be hefty.
It will play in a game where you're, I shouldn't say that the CPs won't matter. In a game where you're playing down to the wire, everything, you've had to bring everything to bear, that might affect you.
Yeah, it's true. So can you able to tell us about the Derridaeo Dread? Because that's one of my favorite dreadnoughts, but it was just so overshadowed for so long by the Leviathan, it wasn't even was never even a consideration.
12 wounds, toughness 7.
Yep.
It has the Martial Legacy rule, so you got to spend something to get in here.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for specifically?
What are its guns? So I'm a big fan of the plasma gun, and I used to love the idea of the plasma gun with weapons of the Dark Angels. But and it used to be strength 8 minus 3, flat 3 damaging. 5 shots, I believe. So just looking to see if anything like that's changed.
When you supercharge it, it is heavy 6, strength 8, neg 3, damage 3.
Nice.
But then when you roll a 1, you suffer a mortal wound.
Yeah. And what are the points in it? It's about 230-ish points at the moment.
Asking some hard questions.
I'm just hoping it's gone down a little bit. I'd be very happy for it to have gone down maybe 20 or 30 points, because at 230, it is, for only 12 wounds, it's pretty hefty.
So base points is 190 points.
Okay.
And if you put the plasma on there, it's 10 extra points, so it puts you to 200.
Okay, yeah, 30 points, 30-point discount. No, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and yeah, stout.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
A Duty Eternal and Atomic Shielding.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. Like, if it gets the full swathe of all the buffs, like, because it has two heavy bolters in its chest, so then they got a buff technically because it went to two damage. And then if it has an inbuilt 5+ invuln essentially, and then if it, on top of that it gets the -1 damage, it's actually pretty survivable. 12 wounds, toughness 7, -1 damage. It's one wound less than the current Redemptor, and it has got storm bolters or anything, but you get heavy bolters in your guts instead of those storm bolters.
Twin heavy bolter.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. You don't get two, you get one single double, but, and then you get essentially, cause they have to roll the dice on the Redemptor plasma gun. You have to roll a D6. This one just has 6.
Yeah.
It's one less strength, one less rend, but the same damage at damage 3, and you just get 6. You don't have to roll for it. I admitted that you don't have the fist, so you can't punch in combat at all. But, you know, I just wanted to see if they were comparable in points, so it is an actual way-up question.
Took me a long time to warm up to this, that the body of that dreadnought.
It looks like a ship.
It does.
It's got a prow on the front.
Somebody did that meme, you know, where it's coming out of the ocean or whatever. It is like, yeah, I can't not see that.
gotta love
it.
I don't mind it.
It just took me a while to come around to it.
I'm the same with the new land speeders. You know how the new land speeders, you've got that guy sitting in the kind of the cupola or whatever, and he's got the iron hail heavy stubbers on either side of him, and he's like, I can't hear you, brother. What? Huh?
Yeah.
I've got tinnitus. I can't see that anymore.
I ordered one of the ATVs just because.
Oh, fair enough. He's got tinnitus too.
Space Marine armor has compensators for that stuff.
Surely it does. But even then, like, I'm from a design point of view, I'm like, yeah, there was better options there.
Yeah. I'll talk about, so Red, we can commiserate about building the Silent King later on in the show.
Oh, I can't wait.
I've built half the dais so far.
It's not too bad in a lot of cases. Like I said, when I did it and I put mine together, I kept it and probably, I mean, again, you say later on in the show.
I don't want to segue us. I'm not trying to segue us.
I'm more than welcome to move on to the King because, man, I love that model. It's so good. But I mean, I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, not even counting the individual models, such as like the King and the two Triarchs, not counting the little monolith things off to the side. I had the platform itself in 11 pieces. To get to all the stuff and get the detail that you want in there, I don't know how you get all of that as well when you put it all together, unless you're just doing kind of broader colors. You know what I mean?
I've got some ideas, and I know you. And yours looks amazing, so we'll hear what you have to say. We'll do that in the back half of the show.
Sure,
we're almost there. We're actually deep into this one. Look, there is. There's a ton in this book, and I don't want to just go down, you know, thing by thing. But I think we've talked about some of the things that will hit the table. I mean, the Fire Raptor. How do you keep it alive? I'm not sure. What armies can really make the most use of it? I don't know. I'm going to try it. My Bullet Angels, because I have a sweet one painted and had fun using it.
I mean, it's good enough reason for as any.
Yeah. And then what's the worst case that happens? You know, if I get clumsy with it and lose it turn one, then I'm going to try my best not to have that happen.
Well, yeah, I'm the same with my like Derridaeo. I've got two Plasma Cannon Derridaeos sitting there for my Horus Heresy army. I'm going to paint them up for 30k. I might as well get some 40k mileage and see how they go. I've got a whole lot of Guard, 30k Guard, Forge World stuff. And we don't have time to ask all the questions, but my favorite one is the Macarius Vulcan, or even just the Macarius chassis. I think they are the best looking tanks GW's ever produced, but naturally I'd say that. But are you able to tell me what the Vulcan looks like? Does it still have its 30 strength 6 shots?
Which one are you talking about?
Macarius Vulcan.
The Macarius Vanquisher, Macarius Vulcan has the Macarius Vulcan Mega Bolter is heavy 16.
Ooh. So maybe it doesn't double shoot now, because it used to be heavy 15 and you could shoot it twice if you didn't move.
That may be. So is that in the Still Behemoth rules? Like, it gets the Baneblade rules?
No, it's not there. So if it's not listed on its data sheet or next to the weapon, it doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah, that won't be it then.
Well, let's hope the points went down then. It's all good. We can move on, gents.
there's a ton. Again, there's a ton, and happy to talk about anything, or if anybody's got some sweet army lists that they're going to try running, let us know, because whatever. These are beautiful models. You know, they're Forge World still has that mystique to it, because you don't see the models all the time. They're not just on the shelf for you to look at. So when they are on the table, they've got that little bit of, hey, let me pay attention to what's happening.
At Forge World, they're almost in this really kind of weird spot by dint of the models from G-Dub getting so much better. I mean, it used to be that you got your generic stuff from G-Dub and you got your super, super cool, amazing, everyone's going to go wow, ooey, from Forge World. But now the stuff that G-Dub's bringing out is mind-blowingly good. And so Forge World kind of have to do all the obscure stuff to kind of retain that mystique, I think, from here. Just because, like you said, like we're getting stuff like the Silent King out of G-Dub, which is just mind-bendingly incredible. Like, what has Forge World got to do to maintain that mystique now?
Right, true. Right. Well, I tell you what, I mean, we didn't get a chance, or we didn't, just the Lords of War and the Chaos part, you know, when you consider the Charybdis and the Brass Chitin. Scorpion. Yeah. And the Chitin engine. I mean, all of them, I think, have just brought into ninth edition just enough. I know, in my opinion, you talk about the Marcarius and everything, but the Lords of War suffer just because of their detachment until they get something like what the Knights have that give them a little bit back. But those still have play. Like you said before, it's still something that you could put on the table if you have one. And they're not necessarily something that you have to stay away from. They're not completely unusable. You just have to understand that you're paying for them.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think it's just it's a cost versus reward thing. And for the people who love their Forge World models, they're not going to care. One CP, who cares? I want to play with my awesome model. It's just going to be not even a question.
Yeah, very true. All right, guys, let's take a break. And then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about orcs. We'll talk about building the Silent King.
Yep.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Still got Red and Adam here.
Hello.
Hey.
Talking about some brain boys. So the orcs.
Yeah.
So as old as fantasy and sci-fi literature itself. I mean, they were orcs in Warhammer Fantasy Battle and in Lord of the Rings, and then cleverly titled Space Orcs for 40K.
I suppose the concept of like the primal savage is just it's tale as old as time. But yeah, we've always had this kind of concept that these lawless supposed degenerates. But it seems like in the past couple of years, G-Dub has gone out of their way to kind of flesh out certain points of the orc storyline while keeping other points, to my mind, deliberately vague. Like, remember when they told us about Ulanor. They told us Ulanor is Armageddon, and hence orcs have this primal need to kind of regain the center of their old empire and stuff. Whereas at the same time, they're kind of vague around the genesis of orcs, how they came to be, and what they kind of are. I mean, we know what Space Marines are. Space Marines were created by the Emperor. We know what humans kind of were. We know about a bunch of other stuff, but orcs are kind of kept this in this weird place. Now, there's a lot of different stuff out there. I mean, Paul's just looked it up and he's found that in the fourth edition Orcs and Necrons Codex?
Yeah, but it goes deeper than that. So I shouldn't say that. I don't know when, like, because over time, you know, different lore gets added to it. They want to make things better. They want to tie things in. And so, like, when a new race is created, they have to find ways to knit it into the fabric of the world. And so, like, when Necrons came about and they had their battle with the old ones or whatever, I think probably more story, but that came out. When Gorka Morka, the game, came out, there's bits of lore in that. Mm. And looking back at, like, my brain, I remember first getting, I think maybe before I was even in the game, seeing somebody with Space Orc Raiders, like a squad of 10 dudes, 10 weedy looking orcs that looked kind of like pirates.
Yep.
Yeah. So nah, again, I maybe my brain may be making these miniatures up in my head, but so it's really grown and evolved over the whole time. But we looked into something about the brain boys, which we'll speak about here in a second. And it looked like that was credited to being sourced into the Necron third edition codex and in the Orc fourth edition codex.
Yeah, and so the theory there is that the old ones created the orcs as a fighting force to help combat in the War of the Stars when the Necrons and the Catan tried to take over, right?
Yes.
And so there was an army that was able to be mass produced essentially out of like thin air, essentially fungus, that was both strong enough and numerous enough to contend like with the losing fight, because like in all like the old ones lost. There's no two ways about it. They got their asses handed to them. The Catan and the Necrons, they won that fight.
Did they beat each other into neutrality essentially?
So this is the cool part where we start talking about grand strategy, right? I mean, galactic scale strategy. I mean, when you think about it, the old ones brought, they had the Eldar and the orcs, right?
If we pull
all this together. Yeah. I mean, that. Yeah. And in fact, in the new Necron Codex, I even remember gave me a good chuckle because I did see that reference where they're talking about the Kroorks. Very good. But when you think about it, I mean, the Necrons needed, or they were desperate for a way to persist, right? Because they were this like weakly, they were expansionists, but they weren't, they didn't live very long. And so they used the old ones as this, at least according, you know, as things have changed and the lore has adapted and evolved, they used the old ones as this thing to kind of bring themselves together, right? They pitted themselves against the old ones in order to get over their own factionalism. And so they do that and they come together to fight the old ones and realize that they essentially can't win. And what we don't know is the exact time frame. Like, did the old ones already have the Eldar and the Kroork at this time? Like, were they already fighting them? But this is where the Satan come in, and they're like, oh, hey, we've got the solution. Biotransference, or we'll do this, and you get the Necron army, and we get your energy, and then we'll take them down together. And so they really do, right? They level the old ones pretty much, you know, all together. But at the same time, then the Necrons use that after they realize how much they got essentially taken by the Satan. Mm. They use that to overthrow the Satan, realize that they are not in a position after that. So, you know, they culminate their phasing of it. So they beat the old ones, which arguably that means that they had to, you know, they leveled the playing field with the Kroork and the Eldar. But after beating the old ones and then also beating the Satan, it's like they turned on themselves, right? Their own alliance, taking the Satan out of the picture. I mean, completely enslaving them for the most part. They then realize they have essentially culminated. They don't have the wherewithal to hang in there against the Eldar and the Kroork. And so that's where the Silent King puts them down to sleep for as long as they are. And then he'll come back when the time is right.
Hey,
and so
10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
That's so true. And wasn't it the sundering of the galaxy, the Cicatrix, whatever Redictum, was his like wake up call? He's like, yep, stuff's getting real now. I need to kind of.
Yeah, so the ninth edition codex does a good job of kind of making it kind of vague as to exactly why he came back into it. I think the great, you know, the scar, whatever you want to call it, the new warp storm that came out, I do think that helped contribute. The lore before that was largely that, honestly, in his, like, he went outside of the known galaxy,
yeah,
and that he saw the Tyranid and was like, hey, we gotta handle this problem because there's not going to be anything alive for us to biotransfer ourselves back to if these things get through the galaxy. And so supposedly he like turned around because he saw the Tyranid coming on. And then of course everything else goes down, and I'm still reading the Indominus book, but you know, everybody knows from Psychic Awakening that he's got the Pariah Nexus going down, and it's this huge plan he's got to essentially shut it all down and reset the galaxy to manage all of the warp storms. It's funny that the humans are caught in such a contradicting position because they use the warp to travel, right? Like and that's, if you've read 30K at all, there's a huge political struggle in the background between the navigators and, you know, the Emperor's plans and everything else. And so it's really interesting because the Necrons really do play like they have a way ahead for the humans if the humans were to take advantage of it. Not to say that the Admech aren't doing that already, but the psychic thing, like the Necrons would, their extent or their extreme of fixing the psychic problem essentially negates humanity. It turns humans into zombies. So, I mean, again, we've gotten a long way from the orcs here, but the orcs are definitely, you know, I think going back to that question, did they win? I think the Necrons came out pretty well. I know I'm biased.
Well, I mean, the old ones, I made a comment about the old ones maybe not losing, but I think they definitely lost in the situation. Yeah. The fact that they don't exist in this universe anymore.
Yeah. I would agree. I think that when it comes to the infinite game of strategy, right? It's about, there's not necessarily victory. It's more about who can last the longest in the infinite game. And the old ones are definitely not playing still. So
yeah, that's yeah. Fair enough.
With the orcs now, there's a their connection to the warp is something that's really really interesting. I think that's something another one. I know I said that they told us a little bit about Ulanor. The orc kind of manifestation of the warp is only something that's been fleshed out in kind of the last couple of years, to my mind. Whereas it's like their power of belief.
Well before we get there, I wanna go into the fact that the old ones apparently knit this stuff into their genetic core, the DNA, the very thing that whatever persists from orc to orc or whatever, it's this kind of stuff is in there. So, and when an orc is born, if it's a mech boy or whatever, it already has the mech boy skills in there.
Yeah, it's got this designer quality to it. Like it's that's one thing that leads my credence to the fact that they were created and they're not like a natural evolution of a freaking fungus or something. They're a thing. They're like ants, you know. An army ant is born an army ant. A worker ant is born a worker ant. There is this very real, almost hive quality to them as well, where they have this kind of hive mind-esque connection to the warp also, which it's kind of interesting that they've got that kind of underground assimilated, not so much consonance, but like connection, because it would be the inverted echo of the Tyranids, where the Tyranids are the anathema of the warp. The kind of orcs are like they're connected through it. It's just, I don't know, it's just an interesting bit of interplay between those two concepts.
And again, I don't know the validity of some of this stuff that, because I had not personally read this thing, but it says that the quark could have been very large, much larger, up to 12 meters tall in some cases. But I have to, I guess what I kind of think about that is they probably relied less on the machinery and stuff at that point. That could have just been a biomass, if it was supercharged biomass.
Yeah, well, if it was the old ones creating them to be like, it sounds like the old ones in that context would have had the Eldar as like the Eldar would have been the technically advanced ones. And they just needed mid shields. They just needed bodies to take up space in battles.
See, and look, you know I'm a Robotech fan, at least if you don't know, you're about to know. The Robotech masters created Zentradi and grew them to be very large to fight the Tyranids. So that was, like, that's kind of I guess it's a trope to where you genetically engineer creatures to do your fighting for you when you're
Everyone needs, every army needs grunts.
Yeah. Well, you make, I guess on Reb was talking about that galactic scale, you know, where you are able to swing. There's a theory that your civilization is only as advanced and as powerful as the power it can harvest from its own universe to create things or do things.
Okay.
So as a for instance, you know, we can never travel outside of our solar system or galaxy until we have realistically figured out a way to harvest the power that's in our galaxy, then our solar system, which then leads to things like Dyson spheres. Dyson spheres are energy collectors that harvest the whole power of a sun to.
Oh man, we're getting deep. We're getting deep now. I love it. Continue. who is Dyson and why does he get his own spheres?
Right. Yeah, we've had this actually conversation, I don't know, a year or so ago, that there are no Dyson spheres inside the 40K universe, which is neat in a way, because it's just, that's just a theory of how you collect energy. And, you know, in 40K, we don't have to do that. We have the warp, we have the immaterium, we have other fantastical things that you could use to generate energy. Where I'm going with this is that the old ones in the Satan and that kind of stuff clearly had ways of harnessing and manipulating and using this vast forms of energy that we don't have currently in the universe today, in our 40K universe today.
Yep, I can only agree with that.
And so they used it to do these things like engineer entire races, orcs, Eldari, Necrons, Necrontyr, or whatever they were at the time. Mm. You know,
is there
universe, these relics that have found their way into our world that are just nuggets and shells of what they were back then.
Mm. Do you guys have any other theories about how the orcs came to be? Like, you know, were they elves once, taken by the dark powers, ruined?
I don't know if that trope plays into this one.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, from early days of Warhammer literature. But and who knows what it was back in Fantasy Battle. Because really, I think what the genesis from space orcs really were, like, hey, well, we already have space dwarves and space humans. Let's throw in some space orcs.
So they had that quality in, it wasn't built intrinsically built into all orcs, but it was built into the black orcs. The black orcs were engineered and kind of bred by chaos dwarves in order to be their to be their grunt and their forgers and their slaves. And so they still have that kind of artificial quality to them, even in that setting.
Yeah, but I do think they were. I mean, I remember clear as day in my mind the picture of a mushroom growing into a baby orc, growing into a big orc.
I know, it's so good. It's so good. How do they? The fact they picked mushrooms is and fungus is just hilarious to me.
Yeah, I think you know, because back in the days, that's you know, there used to be the thing that orcs would travel through space hulks, through asteroids. They would literally be flung throughout the universe. And wherever the asteroid land, then you'd have an orc, and the orcs would just get out and start fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I used to love that. Like, Gaz, the first time Gaz invaded Armageddon, he didn't know he was going there. He jumped in his Space Hulk, and the Space Hulk took him to Ulanor. He's like, bam, we're on, boys. Let's do it.
I mean, there's purity in that. You know,
absolutely. It's a fantastic story.
We don't need any more than that, I don't guess. But I do like all this other stuff. Yeah. So the orcs have this genetic coding in all of them that is left over from the old ones, which is pretty neat. And to think orcs used to be good guys, I guess, on that level.
Yeah, that has always been an interesting concept. Like, yeah. And was it the Brain Boys? Are the Brain Boys actually the old ones, or were the Brain
orcs,
Boys
the old ones whom the orcs refer to as the Brain Boys?
Yeah, that makes sense. Which is weird. There wasn't like a highly intelligent orc that died off over time.
No, so the Odd Boys.
Yep.
Their technology is maintained by a cast of Odd Boys who possess genetically implanted dispositions and technical knowledge that grant them the unusual skill while maintaining and developing technology.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yep.
And what where are you reading that from?
This is off Fandom 40K, Warhammer 40K, okay. Fandom.com, Wiki Orc, the Orc Wiki. Yeah, I'm not verifying this independently. I'm reading what is here on this webpage maintained by humans, which I think is important now that one evening I changed the Firehawks slogan to "If you're not first, you're last." So this.
That's
don't
brilliant.
Do that,
I love
by
that
the way.
Stuff.
Don't. That's not a call to action at all. Do not do that.
If you're gonna do it, be funny. Just be hilarious. Don't be serious at all. You're doing it wrong if you're being serious.
don't do it. Just don't do it. These people that maintain these things are treasures, saints. Don't.
That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of work that goes into these. Yeah,
don't make their life harder. But where I'm going is that these the Odd Boys. I think they are the ones however, the skills unconscious when preserved through the genetic memories hardwired into the Odd Boys' DNA by the Brain Boys millions of standard years ago.
Mm. It's such a cool concept, though. Like, I just love that it's still slightly vague, but I think it's almost accepted now, isn't it? That what I said before, that we're kind of a creation in order to like level a playing field.
I don't know. I don't know what people know what orcs, because I mean, again, our like, if you were to ask me, like, if I was in a game store and you'd ask me what's up, I'd be like, they're mushrooms, they're fungus. I would know. I would not know anything about this whole Brain Boys situation.
Mm. Well, I mean, but
and I would argue with you.
Good, you should.
Like, I love those
it's a yeah, same here. It's a whacked out concept, but you know, theoretically, if you were an old one and you had an enemy that had just become immortal, essentially, that as long as they could produce metal bodies, they could continue to produce soldiers, like in infinite souls to pump into infinite soldiers. Surely you'd create an infinite meat shield, grunt force, yeah, or something of an ilk of an orc.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, even reading this Indominus book, like, there's very few cases where I'm reading that, like, Necron warriors, even, you know, they're not, there's nothing special about Necron warriors, but very few cases that I'm reading where they're actually destroyed. They just phase out and they go away and then they repair themselves and come back. Like, you have to find their tomb world and break them apart there.
Oh,
yeah.
That's something else entirely.
I didn't know that.
Get them at the source. Go into the Matrix.
See, yeah, another thing. I'd love to be able to be arguing about this stuff in a game store.
Oh, man, how good would that be, though?
That's one of the things where our phones in our pockets, I think it's that's a piece of our culture that we're missing, because I used to love hearing these conversations play out with people who were just dead set on their opinions of things, of what was, and they, you know, now we can just look it up.
Right. Yep.
And you should be looking up, like, you know, how, you know, what temperature do you need to cook meat to? Look that up. Don't have that debate. I'm glad we have the computer for that. But
yeah,
like, the origin of an orc, I wish we could have healthier debates about.
Hopefully soon.
Yeah. And we will. Yeah. So that's one of the things. Keep your phones in your pockets just to debate it. If you're with someone now listening to the podcast, debate them about the origin of the orc. Or tell us how we're wrong. We can't hear you right now, but it's equally as funny and as challenging.
Oh, dude. I think the G-Dub keeping a lot of their lore pieces vague is one of the best decisions they've made as far as their IP. It leaves their so much of their storytelling so wide and so open. And yeah, it's just awesome.
Well, nothing is too big. Like everything, no matter how ridiculous of something that you can think about, it actually can fit in the 40K universe.
Mm, exactly right. I hope that I'm not up to date with the AOS with the Age of Sigmar lore anywhere near as much, but I'm hoping there's the same juicy tidbits in there for the lovers of that game as well.
Oh, it's even getting better. I don't know if you saw I don't want to take us on a tangent on Sigmar because I don't.
The Shattered Realms.
Yeah. It's
stuff. Yeah.
People are getting really excited about that. Well, let's talk about the, so we were talking about building the Silent King. I know I didn't segue us earlier, and at least I tried not to, and we kind of brought up Necrons during this segment. So I felt like we can go ahead and talk about the Silent King.
So what's the okay issues,
you guys? Man, so it actually is kind of a feat of sprue technology. There are two; it's a three sprue kit, and two of the sprues are identical.
Okay.
So that probably saved GW a lot of engineering and manufacture cost and that kind of stuff. So it's probably a big win for them, and I like it too. Except when you're trying to build the stupid steps on the front of it. I mean, Red, you may have had an easier time with it than I did, but. The steps on the top, on the front of it, each one of those steps is in two halves.
Yep.
So you've got to glue them together without much. There aren't like little pegs or anything that fit in there.
Nope.
So those two essentially flat surfaces that you just have to glue together. And I've gotten into the habit of using plastic glue for plastic. And I actually enjoy it, especially if you're going to be handling your models a lot. The plastic glue creates the chemical weld between the two pieces, and you get a long term, you get a stronger hold. But in the short term, the pieces, you don't get that, like with that super glue, you could just stick it there, maybe spray it with some accelerator, and it's rock solid. Mm-hmm. You don't have that with plastic glue. And I was too lazy to go get the super glue. So I just sat there and struggled with it, thinking each one was going to get a little bit easier with the steps, but it did not. Nope. So if anyone has not built the Silent King, if you use super glue, at least on the stairs, I think you'll have a much easier time and not call them stupid stairs at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, the stairs, I don't know how far along you are, but the side platforms that the Triarchs stand on, they're kind of in a similar boat. And so, like, it was definitely something putting it all together. But again, doing it in subcomponents really helped making sure that when I painted it, I got all the detail in between. Because so like my stairs are a completely separate color from the whole point that they attach to. Mm-hmm. And to just get all the detail and everything to the effect that I wanted, I couldn't even, I mean, I looked at it and I sat there and played around with it. I built you can build at least three of the steps all together into one piece. And so I painted it and like at least put together that much. But I see some people painting, you know, they're painting the entire construction together, just minus the three models.
Just paint what you can see.
Yeah. I mean, I was sitting there, of course, as I'm putting together these 11 subcomponents, I'm like, well, no one's ever going to see that little spider I spent all that time painting. But
there's a spider under the stairs. There's two spiders or scarabs or whatever under the stairs.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I painted those.
Hey, but you know it.
That's right.
You did a great job. The model, I haven't posted it yet, but I can certainly throw it up because I think people would like to see it. You did a great job on it.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's some people have done some amazing jobs out there. I mean, I'm by no means the best or remotely, I'd argue, that good, but I did like how it turned out. I the model itself is fantastic. So my meager paint job on it really just took it, you know, a little bit up there, I guess.
But well, when I take pictures of this one, I'm going to try not to get it from an angle that shows the walkiness of the steps.
Yeah. And so I fiddled around with, because, you know, when they go on, like you said, I mean, it's the touch point that they go on to, once you've got them all together, it's a very small touch point. It's not like they rest on a lot of other supports to it. And so this is something, this model, I would definitely tell people to be extremely careful with.
Yeah.
Extremely.
I think that's probably the trickiest part. At least that's the trickiest part that I've got too. I've built the dais. I haven't built the parts that the Cryptex stand on, but I built everything else. And this, you could easily make this a showpiece model. Like, you know, forget what I said about the two identical sprues. It goes together into a showpiece model. Like, it's, you wouldn't guess that it had a, you know, duplicate components in it. It doesn't look like that when it's finished. And so that's kind of a marvel of a design onto itself. And you want to take your time. Like I brought one of the pieces that I've had this file forever. It's just it's a small, I don't know where it came from. Some model store 100 years ago. It's maybe 6 inches long and not even a quarter inch wide or something. It's just a file, a metal file. Been using that a lot more on some models, and especially this one, because you want those ornate pieces to look ornate. You don't want to have a mold line or a spruce gab or something haunting you with this. So take your time with it, and really take your time with those stairs, because they're one of the centerpieces of the miniature.
Mm-hmm.
And if they look a little, they look all off or weird or slanted or whatever, it'll throw off the overall look. Now, I think that you can compensate for it. Like once you throw the Silent King on there and his cape comes down, and you know, you distract him with some other glow effects on the engines and things like that. You know, there's ways to dig yourself out of that, but I think you're better off if you just take a lot of time. And then, yeah, don't use the plastic glue on the steps. If you can avoid it, if you have both glues available, use the super glue on the steps, because I think once you get them exactly right, you want them to stick there and not be messing with it. And you don't want to attach it and then turn away from it for 10 minutes and come back and it sagged on you by the time you got back. It's all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like these were kind of like words of use my story as a cautionary tale. To make yours look better.
Got a question for you, gents. I suppose this might be too late in the piece to get a conversation started on the character of the Silent King, as in the actual character of the dude. But
like his moral fiber, his integrity.
Yeah, because it was always made out that he was a dude who made mistakes. He's, you know, took his people down the wrong path. But then before he took it right off into the sunset, he made some right choices and did the right thing by his people, giving them back sentience, giving them back choice. How is he portrayed in the new novels? Like, I don't actually know how he's portrayed in the new books. I haven't really got a sense of what they're seeing for this dude.
I tell you what, I mean, you know, society's favoritism towards postmodern reconstruction is in full effect. No,
okay.
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
No, so it's really interesting, because like you said, he's kind of he was always portrayed as this really tragic character, right? Like very much the tragedy that he gets tricked by the deceiver into this whole, you know, the Necron biotransference deal. And the Indominus book does a really good job. There's a new book between Orokin versus Trazin the Infinite, which I think is another great book into kind of some of the background meanderings of the Necrons. But this Indominus book does a good job showing some of I haven't seen the Silent King yet in the book, so if it's in there, I'm hoping. But you kind of get this build-up deal. I mean, when he comes back in full power. He's reviving his own dynasty. Some of the Necrons are so not happy with him that they themselves have been destroying his dynasty when they dig it up, or, you know, or taking it over or whatever. The Eldar definitely hunted down specifically his dynasty, just out of spite. But no, the thing being, so he arguably let go of the codes, right? That's what the lore was. He released everybody from the codes and he went away, which to one point could have been him just saying like, hey, you're free to act to defend yourself upon your reawakening or whatever. Because what it is kind of like the vagueness, that vagueness that I think we all kind of appreciate in 40K, where there's always something more to it and you don't know the full story. And even when some of it gets revealed, there's still more to it. Is that so? Imhotep, right? Imhotep's kind of been one of the, I mean, he was a Lord of War for a little bit there, right?
He was a beast on the table for a while.
Yeah. I mean, he's now suffering the Marnius syndrome, right?
Yeah. All of a sudden, second fiddle. He was about to be, you know, king of all Necrons, and now he's.
That's right. And so he was a big deal. He still is. And he's actually very anti-Silent King. He, like, has tinfoiled hat this entire scenario that the king actually still has the codes, that the king is like rewriting. Like, so if he meets you, or he has like can reach out and touch you, he can rewrite your codes, you know? And so there's a way, like, and the book does a really good job. This Indominus book does a really good job of showing like how much control the Necrons have over one another. Like a Necron overlord or Pharaon can like just lock people down and absolutely like mandates control. It's very cool because it's almost like this you know, networked system of management and everything that they have. And so Emotech is very anti-Silent King, very anti-codes, like regards. It's ironic because he's sitting here trying to run arguably one of the biggest Necron dynasties out there. But it kind of paints this picture that the Silent King is back and not just a, he's almost got some similar veins to the Emperor, right? Like he's coming back. He's going to save the Necron race, even if it means that he's got to crush parts of the Necrons just to get them back in line. And at the same time, he's got like the ability to just, because again, that their existence is all coded, right? And he just goes in and rewrites your code. Oh, well, you've been working for me the whole time. Like, I mean, he could essentially matrix the entire, all of the Necrons, right?
Yeah.
Like they didn't even have an idea that they were not to, you know, working for him to begin with. So it's very cool, the kind of complexity, I guess, behind him, because he's coming back in, this whole pariah nexus, the idea, you know, Cadia was part of the Necron network that was dampening and managing the warp within the galaxy.
Those pylons on Cadia were Necron things, that's correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yep. And what's cool is like the game, like Battlefleet Gothic, really highlighted that, really, really did a good job of highlighting that. And so, you know, this whole thing, again, going back to this weird contradiction that the Imperium finds itself in, is that the Necrons, arguably, they probably have a lot of the answers to solving the chaos issue and the warp issue in a lot of ways. But the humans are, and the Necrons themselves, are probably never going to come to close enough terms to solve the problem, right? They're always going to be fighting to one extent. I mean, you go back to the destruction of Bale, right? When the Tyranids were swarming through, it was the Mefrit dynasty that essentially turned some stars into cannons and deleted large parts of the Hive Fleet. And it still wasn't enough. They ended up, the Necrons conveniently saved some of their stuff, but didn't save all the Blood Angels. So again, just very interesting stuff. I know I went on kind of a tangent, but the silent, yeah, of course, the Silent King aspect to it. I mean, I really am looking forward to it. I don't think, and again, having not finished it, I don't think Indomitus is a one book series. You know, I think there's going to be more, and I'm really looking forward to, if possible, man, a Silent King Gilliman showdown. Not even fighting, just an engagement would be amazing to see.
That'd be awesome, actually. Because the Silent King is a very unique thing to be added back into the game. It's been a long time since we had something of the... Well, it's been since Gilliman, since Mortarion and Magnus, that we had something of his level, of his ilk, and of his importance to the storyline added back in. And I'd even say, like, this is the big call, but I'd even say he's more pivotal than any single Primarch. Like,
oh, come on, man.
Not Gilliman. Like, if there was a second Primarch that came out now, like, if let's say we got Leman Russ, I'd say him for the Necrons is more important than Leman Russ is for the Imperium.
I actually, yes. I do see what you're saying, though, is like this guy is he's the Emperor level. I mean, as far as and respect and authority within his faction.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. But even above and beyond something like Vect, you know, Vect is the leader of Komorar now. He's been the leader of Komorar for X amount of years. This is the primogenitor core concept that the entire Necron faction is built around. His choice spawned the entire faction.
Yeah, and like, Vect is even just a leader. I mean, he's like Eldred, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And Eldred's
yeah.
just the head of a, well, you know, if he's the head, but he's, you know, the most well-known craft world from, was it, Ulthwayan?
Mm. Yeah, he's running the Ulthwayan show, right? Like, yeah. They're still factional, right? Like, Vect doesn't have all of the Dark Eldar underneath him. You could argue, you know, obviously Imotech is proof that, no, the Silent King doesn't have them all, but we just don't know yet. Like, there's nothing saying that the Silent King just hasn't, like, he's cool with Imotech doing his deal right now because he's so efficient, and the Silent King could just essentially kite Imotech into doing whatever he wants. For all we know, the Silent King could just be enabling that kind of rebellious code in Imotech at this point to do whatever. Like, I mean, the scope or scale of the Silent King right now, again, we talk of, you know, I always have enjoy conversations in regards of like the Emperor, especially in regards of what he was capable of during 30K. I mean, the Silent King is, like you said, he's on those levels. Unfortunately, I think Gilliman is, he's not, he doesn't have the all-powerful omnipotent capability, but he is the Lord Regent of the Imperium right now. He does have the entire Imperium. Every faction goes underneath him, you know. I can't say that there are many other characters that have that same capacity.
Good old Dante.
He's got half of the Imperium, okay? Just half.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm kidding, because Dante's not that level of figure either. I mean, he is well respected if you already know who he is, you know, kind of thing. This is the Silent King. Like every Necron knows who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm digging it. I think it's a very cool model. And again, I'm looking forward to trying to paint it. I've got some ideas about how I want to, you know, with a model like this, you want to bring out your best tricks.
Yeah. Is this for Sean?
It is. Yeah. But if you're adding this to your own collection, this is where you want to bring forward all those finishing moves, all your tricks, put that extra time, put that extra edge highlight on things. Learn how to edge highlight if you don't already know how to edge highlight.
No. So I looked up, I think I mentioned before, I did some test models going into it, but I looked up some of Duncan's videos on how to do power weapons and things like that, just to really make sure that, like you said, like you don't want to hold back on this. And I tried not to.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to try new things, and don't be afraid to redo something if it's not exactly what you want. I mean, this is when you put it on the table, you want to, you know, while it sits there for two turns before it's some, you know, everyone fires the whole army at it, you want it to be an intimidating sight.
And it is. And so that's one thing, is that, like, you know, it's the model, we've talked about it some. I mean, 26 wounds broken up over three models, and he's tough. Like, some people say he's too obvious, he's too big, he's just going to take away, like, he's going to take it. Some people say that he can't last more than two turns or whatnot. I think if your opponent just spent two turns trying to get him off the field, I don't think you're in a bad position.
I agree with you. I think the distraction Karn effects is alive and well today, and just in a different form.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm hoping it's in the form of my fire raptor that I'm going to put on the table as well. But we shall see. But guys, it's been a good chat. I know we jumped around a little bit, and with the new stuff coming out, look, there's the game is, the meta is going to shift. We just got three massive books. So Death Watch, we know, have the ability to influence and pivot on different things and get more use out of their doctrines. You know, they're going to be a force. People will be trying to play with them. And then by the nature that they exist, will make some things less reliable than it is today. And Space Wolves are a faction that people love. The people are going to be trying to wring power out of that thing. And then the Forge World Compendium sprinkled things to everyone except Death Guard and Thousand Sons. But they're doing arguably, I mean, Thousand Sons is not doing okay, but Death Guard's doing okay right now. But yeah, more stuff to talk about. Tune in next week. Y'all guys got anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, I'm good.
Had a blast.
Catch y'all next week.
Take care.
See you then.
Like, share, and subscribe.
Make my day.